Hi, I'm Rick Bennett, host of Gospel Tangents. I need your help. Please donate on our website, gospeltangents.com, and click on the donate button. It can be a one-time donation or a recurring donation. Your donation will help us to create better resources to learn more about Mormon history. So far, it's been a labor of love, but I really need some help getting better equipment, better sound, that sort of thing. So please either commit to a recurring donation or a one-time donation. We'll take any help we can get. Thank you for your help. This is our last conversation with David Rosenbaum. In our last few episodes, we've tried to poke holes in David's theory of the theory of the Book of Mormon. In this episode, we'll talk about strengths of the theory. We'll talk about the narrow neck of land. Now, I know a lot of you are listeners on iTunes, and I really appreciate that, but this is one episode you may want to tune in on YouTube. We'll zoom in on his map as he talks about different geographical features of the Baja Peninsula that he thinks correlate with the Book of Mormon. I hope you check out our conversation. All right, so let's go back. I've been trying to hit you on you know, the weaknesses here. Let's talk about your strengths. What are some other things that you think that Baja is better as compared to other geography theories?
I think the thing that is probably the most solid for us to stand on is the text. When you look at the text from a geographical standpoint, there are certain things that just tie it to a semi-arid environment. The seeds we already mentioned, talked about, the temperature of them, even the description of getting lost, for example, when an army follows another group and you can't follow their tracks. As a geographer, you say, wait a second, this is called chaparral. You know, it's a lot like Moab, right? You walk on it, nobody knows you walked on it. A jungle, you start walking through a jungle, you can follow them for a week. And you start looking at all the things in the text, and it all starts describing a semi-arid environment. It would make a lot of sense that Nephi and Lehi and those people left from a semi-arid environment, a Mediterranean climate, and went to a place they seemed very comfortable with. They didn't talk about very new foods or even their crops. They knew how to grow their crops. They understood the seasons, the watering, all that kind of thing seems to be inherent when they landed. And so that for us is one of the bases. It's just the pure geography of where they went. I think one of the other things that makes Baja a little unique is this concept of being isolated. The text over and over seems to imply that they were alone. They didn't have encounters with other people. They were always the kings. They were always fighting with their brothers. When they found the Mulekites, they were so excited that they put it in their record. When they found evidence of another culture that had been wiped out, they put it in the record. And so you have to have some location that seems very isolated. How do you isolate a group of people for that long that they don't talk about anyone else? And a peninsula like Baja, even today, is isolated from mainland Mexico, even with all we have. So it's a great place for isolation. So semi-arid, isolated environments are probably two of the strongest strengths that we have.
Well, because you did mention that. So how far is it from mainland Mexico?
It depends on where you are. So, as you know, the Sea of Cortez varies in width, and there's only one place that you can actually see mainland Mexico from Baja. It's in the area just a little bit north of halfway here, a place called Bahia de Los Angeles, where you can actually see across here. Everywhere else you can't even see, which is interesting because the text talks about, in this very location, the text where the sea divides the land, where we assume they could see it. So here it's about 40 miles. Everywhere else it gets up into 60, 70, 80 miles. So the only place they could have seen mainland Mexico is right where it was described, right near the narrow neck, the line of defense. So we actually look at that and go, geographically, that's kind of neat that their one location and the only place in Baja where you have a place that you can see across is kind of exciting.
Well, now, my question is, if they've traveled thousands of miles from China, shouldn't that 40-mile be a pretty easy jaunt across that, especially if they can see land?
Yeah, you would think that. Now, they started at the bottom and over, you know, got up here at around 50 BC or so is when we start hearing about this area. Did they cross? We don't know. They may have. We have nothing in the record to say they did or they didn't. They had the ability to cross, and maybe some did. We do know that many went northward out of Zarahemla, and we never hear about them again. Did they only go northward? Did they cross? Highly possible. What we do know is the Uto Aztecan people used this as their, you know, where they start. The Proto-Uto Aztecan language is up here. They went up all the way to Idaho. They went all the way down to Panama. And so, you know, did some cross and move? We don't know. If they did, that would be the best place to cross. You know, when did they discover all this? We just don't have the record. You know, we're just taking things that we have from the record. They talk about two narrow locations in the Book of Mormon. Everyone's familiar with the narrow neck. There's also a narrow strip. And, you know, we asked ourselves, why would they call it narrow? Well, perhaps it's a site where you could see both oceans at the same time from some vantage point. And in Baja California, there's only two places. You get on the mountains here, you can see both sides. Or you do it from here, you can see. But all these others, you can't see both sides. And so from their vantage point, without a map, it would be very understandable why you'd call that a narrow strip of wilderness and that a narrow neck of land. Again, those are two very prominent things in the Book of Mormon. And so all of the descriptions that we see make a lot of sense to us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, great. Well, I'll let you go here. So where can people learn more about your theory?
You bet. So we have a website. It's called achoiceland.com. So www.achoiceland.com. And we just keep putting up articles, maps, and other things that people can download and hopefully augment with their reading. Our hope is that people will read the book. That's our goal. Read the book. We hope that it will give them a context to understand what's going on, because I do believe if people understand the geography, the text makes more sense. Just like if you visit the Holy Land, reading the New Testament's never the same. If you go to Nauvoo, church history is never the same. Our hope that is there's some sort of geographical context when you're reading the text, because I think it will enhance the doctrines. But this isn't why the Book of Mormon was given to us. It wasn't to help us understand geography. It was much bigger, to understand the covenants and the promises made, and what happens when you live a righteous life and what happens when you don't. So hopefully this is a little bit of salt for the feast when you're reading the Book of Mormon.
All right. Well, David, I'd like to thank you for spending some time with us here on Gospel Tangents, and I hope people check out your website.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with David Rosenvall. In our next discussion, I'm excited to introduce a member of the First Presidency. His name is Jim Van Cannon. Never heard of him? That's because he's a member of the Remnant Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They're a breakoff of the RLDS Church. Anyway, I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about their church and how it started and that sort of thing. In our first conversation, we'll talk about a literal descendant of Aaron. Jim has a member of the presiding bishopric that is a literal descendant of Aaron that serves there.
Now, our presiding bishop actually is a literal descendant of Aaron.
Oh, really?
So, yes, Kevin Romer.
Okay.
Is actually, yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
So, yeah, that was new for us. So.
Oh, so I would assume that he got that through the patriarch. Is that how you declare lineage?
The patriarchs will give you lineage. In his particular case, he had it from the patriarch and from the president of the church.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.